Hi, so I will be speaking about a study that looked at empowerment from the perspective of development organizations, and I have no financial relationships to disclose. I recently graduated, so I don't have very many finances to speak of at all. But, so empowerment is an increasingly prominent topic in global health and in international development. And it's been embraced in the programs of major entities such as the World Bank and USAID, as well as hundreds of other smaller NGOs around the globe. But at the same time, a little bit like rural, the term empowerment lacks a consistent definition. And Ruth Alsop, who's one of the foremost experts in the field, writes that there are many different interpretations of what empowerment means, both analytically and operationally, and that these interpretations are often inconsistent. And so for me, attempts to define empowerment call to mind that very famous paraphrasing of the Supreme Court justice that my fellow presenter referenced earlier. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. And so he was actually talking about pornography and not empowerment, but the sentiment definitely holds true. And this vagueness and ambiguity can actually be quite challenging for researchers and from program directors, particularly giving rise to difficulties related to monitoring and evaluation. Because if you don't have a definition, it's difficult to develop indicators. Without indicators, you can't measure or demonstrate program success, replicate effective programs, or obtain continued funding. So in an attempt to kind of unpack this concept of empowerment a little bit further, we designed a study to examine what empowerment means to development organizations. Because after all, they're the ones that are implementing empowerment programs in the field. And we asked three main research questions. How do organizations conceptualize empowerment? So what do they mean by it? What is the role of organizations in promoting empowerment? So is this, you know, can NGOs actually give power, directly empower people? Or is their role more of a facilitative, a supportive one? And the third question was, how do agencies operationalize empowerment? So once they have a sense of what it means, what do they do about it? And the study itself posed a little bit of a methodological challenge, because on the one hand, we wanted data in which organizations describe empowerment in their own words, so we can get at their understanding of it. And at the same time, we wanted to develop an accurate organizational perspective, and that required data from a broad range of organizations that are diverse in terms of geography and size and programmatic focus. And we obviously didn't have the funding to go flying around the world conducting interviews, although I would have loved to do that. So the solution that we hit upon was to use an electronically distributed self-completion questionnaire comprised of open-ended questions. And the way we did this is we sent a link to our questionnaire to umbrella development organizations, and then they distributed it to their member organizations. And most of these umbrella organizations were health-focused. We received about 48 responses, which is actually a pretty high number for a qualitative study, and then we analyzed the data using grounded theory. Okay, so. Onto the results. Most of the agencies that return responses couldn't offer us a concise definition of what empowerment means. But from their descriptions, we were able to derive a more general definition of it as the ability to make choices and make changes. And more concretely, we learned that agencies conceptualize empowerment as a process of transformation, or actually as three processes: the empowerment of individuals, the empowerment of communities, and the empowerment of local partner organizations. And by that, I should mention that most of our respondent organizations were larger international NGOs who often partner with local grassroots agencies on the ground. So they see it as all or part of their mission to empower those agencies as well. And these processes, all three of them, are characterized by a common set of 10 mechanisms. So due to time constraints, I'm really going to focus on the process of community empowerment, but I would be delighted to talk about the others during Q&A. So at the heart of this process of empowerment is the idea of agency. And agency is this triangle here. And it's composed of three mechanisms. Emerging identity, which refers to a sense of self-worth and self-confidence and the ability to articulate values and to set goals. And that feeds into decision-making capacity. Ooh, sorry about that. Which is the ability to make decisions based on your values and goals and then to have those decisions recognized. And together, they feed into this third mechanism of affecting change, the belief in your own ability to take action based on your decisions and actually affect change. And so these three mechanisms together make up agency. And that really refers to the essence of a community's capacity for decision and action. And the sense of agency is in many ways at the beating heart of empowerment. But at the same time, it requires certain external mechanisms to be made manifest. And one of those is knowledge. So access to knowledge and access to information, be it through formal education or through more informal means, is critical to bolstering a community's sense of self-confidence to informing decisions and to then allowing a community to identify what changes need to be made. A second critical supporting mechanism is opportunity structure. And this refers to the idea that a community needs to have really an enabling environment or socio-political structures, institutional frameworks, and relationships that enable them to exercise that agency. And so both our respondents as well as other research in the field stress that the relationship between agency and opportunity structure is really critical to understanding empowerment. And if that's not entirely clear, please ask me about it later. Another critical supporting mechanism is capacity building. And capacity building refers to increasing the ability of communities to provide services for their members, to demand services and accountability from the government, and to advocate for change. And this can be done by helping communities organize and develop the structures that can then work for change. And as you can see, it's really closely related to opportunity structure because building a community's capacity does change its opportunity structure. According to the data, capacity building is supported by another mechanism as well, resource provision, which refers to the direct provision of supplies and resources, be they financial or educational materials, food, medicines, anything like that. And that was actually a little bit surprising considering that the final mechanism we identified is sustainability, the idea that communities should have the ability to support their projects without outside assistance, ensuring self-sufficiency. And our respondents stressed that this last piece is critical to lasting and ongoing empowerment. So, okay, I'll mention very briefly that the process of local partner organization is actually identical to this process of community empowerment, except that the agency or the entity being empowered is an agency and not a community. And then the process of individual empowerment is described by this kind of core piece here, agency, knowledge, and opportunity structure. Okay. So once we understood that agencies viewed empowerment as a process, we asked a second research question, which was how do organizations understand their role in this process? And as you might guess, the broad consensus was that agencies felt they couldn't directly empower communities, but rather their role was to catalyze this process of empowerment by facilitating the mechanisms that I discussed. And they do this through their programs and activities, and those programs and activities we identified fall into four spheres: health empowerment, political empowerment, economic empowerment, and natural resource empowerment. So natural resource empowerment refers to the ability to access, share, and conserve and effectively use natural resources. So examples of programs that address this would be programs that work on food security or water management. Economic empowerment refers to the ability to achieve financial security and self-sufficiency in order to meet needs and improve quality of life. So an example would be programs that focus on market access or microfinance. Political empowerment refers to the ability to access government and social services, demand accountability, organize for self-government, and for advocacy. So examples of these programs would be programs that organize town hall meeting-style forums. And the last one is health empowerment, which refers to the ability to make decisions regarding, to seek, and to receive care. And that means that care needs to be not only physically available, but also financially accessible and socially and culturally accessible as well. So I'm going to give some examples now so that you can see how the mechanisms work within these different spheres. One of our respondents described a natural resource empowerment program in which communities were empowered to make decisions about resource allocation through the involvement of traditional municipal and community representatives. From their engagement in formal dialogue, concrete initiatives relating to farming and pastoral practice were agreed upon, proposals to current law were made, and critical networking and relationship building occurred among groups that had formerly been in conflict. And so in this quote, we emphasize the way that a program can actually build community capacity, in this case by creating the forum where communities could come together. And in doing so, it changes opportunity structure by creating new networks and new relationships among these communities. And that in turn leads to the development of agency, because we see the communities coming together, making decisions and taking action to propose changes to current law and so on. A second program was a political empowerment program that provided an opportunity for community members to communicate their needs to district health officials. As a result, officials have committed to allocating new resources towards community priorities, and civil society groups have been equipped with simple checklists to monitor the implementation of new policies. And again, we see an example of a program that changes opportunity structure, in this case, the relationship between the communities and the health officials, by providing a forum for the community to bring their needs to the attention of these health officials. The program also builds community capacity by equipping the community to monitor and to hold the government accountable. And in doing so, the program assists communities to exercise agency, to express their priorities to the district council, and to advocate for change. And a third example is of a health empowerment program that trains community health workers who in turn mobilize their neighbors to practice good hand washing and careful control of drinking water in order to combat a cholera outbreak. And here again, we see the importance of knowledge and training to building community capacity. In this case, the community health workers represent a community capacity, and that in turn enables the community to take action to promote good health and access to care. Okay. So, although we've discussed these four spheres of empowerment, it's important to recognize that these spheres aren't isolated, but instead they're actually very intimately interwoven. Respondent agencies recognize this and they address this by designing programs that harness the very same mechanisms to promote empowerment across multiple spheres at one time. And we think that this Venn diagram is an effective way of representing that because each of the areas of overlap on the diagram is actually represents a type of program that was described to us in the data that we returned. And we can see this overlap in some of the spheres some of the examples that we've already discussed. So for example, the program in which communities advocated for expanded health services is an example of both health empowerment and political empowerment. And the program in which communities joined together to self-regulate water resources is an example of both political empowerment and natural resource empowerment. There are also very specific consecutions by which empowerment in one sphere leads to empowerment in the others. And again, each pathway that's reflected on the diagram is represented by examples that were given to us in the data. So specifically, we saw that natural resource empowerment can lead to political empowerment, health empowerment, and economic empowerment, and political empowerment and economic empowerment can lead to each other and to health empowerment. And so to give an example of one of these pathways, natural resource empowerment can lead to economic empowerment when women who get training and seeds to, for example, grow a home garden are then able to sell that produce for disposable income. And in turn, economic empowerment can lead to health empowerment when women use that additional income to pay for medical care for themselves and their children. So just to closing, to touch on the implications of these findings for community-based program planning and services. We're excited because we feel that in some sense, this community empowerment model can offer a template for community-based programs that seek to empower people in the spheres discussed. The mechanisms themselves represent kind of core capacities, if you will, that empowerment programs can address. And by promoting and facilitating these mechanisms, programs can assist communities to take a leadership role in priority setting, planning, and interacting with development agencies, in advocating for access, accountability, and services from the government, and in organizing for self-governance, resource allocation, and the direct, sustainable provision of services. And similarly, as we kind of discussed in the last two slides, promoting community empowerment in one sphere can lead to empowerment in other spheres, both through the pathways and the relationships that I talked about, and because again, we see these same mechanisms operating in all spheres of empowerment. So for example, mechanisms and capacities that are developed in one sphere can also catalyze empowerment in the other spheres as well, even if the program doesn't directly address that. Thank you.